from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. We are broadcasting live from Contra Costa College in San Pablo. And if you would indulge us, I'd like you to picture yourselves back in the 1940s in North Richmond. We're kicking back at a juke joint called Annabelle's.
Hello, everybody. How you doing? This here's Annabelle's, where the hooch is hoochin'. Come get you some soul food that'll feed your spirit.
That was Nia Bingaziani. Thank you. That's again Nia Bingaziani. We go by the name Nia, right, Nia?
Nia Bingaziani, yes.
Nia Bingaziani, thank you. Studio manager for Richmond's Rise Center and lead cast member in the upcoming play that the center is doing called Richmond Renaissance.
Yes.
And the play brings to life one of the legendary blues clubs, or as they were called, juke joints, that thrived in North Richmond during the 1940s. Thank you again, Nia. And also joining us, DeAndra Evans, who is performing arts assistant at the Rise Center and a cast member and lead playwright for Richmond Renaissance. Welcome. Good to
have you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you here. And welcome also to historian Dr. Shirley Ann Wilson Moore, author of To Place Our Deeds, The African-American Community in Richmond, California, 1910 to 1963. Good to have you with us as
well. Nice to be here. Thank you all.
Thank you all for being here. And DeAndra, tell us about the play.
Well, the play focuses on the importance of ownership and community, and it's about this character, Annabelle, and her black-owned juke joint in 1940s in North Richmond, California. And we will follow her as well as the staff who works under her at her place.
A lot of blues, right?
Yeah, it has a lot of blues as far as music, but also kind of like pain. And it's showing you how we go through our pain and how we use our music and our love for each other to go through our pain and help each other out. You know, we need to get back to the idea of community and helping out your brother, your sister, and people who you see on the street, because that's very important to us.
You want to educate people who come to see the play along the lines you just outlined. What else?
Yeah, I want to educate people. I also want to want people to come and hang with us and have a good time, because when you come to our show, it's like you hanging with us. You in the moment. It's not just you buying the ticket. You're not just watching us. You feel like you really with us on that stage, and that's the most important thing about it.
Why'd you choose this era, though? You're going to be with you, but we're going to be back in time, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you might want to dress up how we dressing up. You feel me? You could try that.
But again, are you drawn to this period? We're going to hear more about it from Dr. Moore, of course, but what drew you to it?
Honestly, the artistic core group that we work in, it's a few of us, and they have we all had decided that we wanted to do a piece about Richmond in the 1940s because it was a gold mine. It had a lot of businesses owned in that area, and I'm not necessarily from North Richmond, but North Richmond at the time was the only place where black people could own something. And so we thought it was important to put some shine and some light onto that. You feel me? So after they came to me, I said, okay, I'll be the lead playwright. But I said I wanted my sis, Nia, to be the lead in the production.
Well, let's talk to Nia, because she is the lead in this production. She's Annabelle. And let me just mention again that DeAndra Evans is performing arts assistant with the Rice Center, lead playwright and cast member for Richmond Renaissance. And I want to mention that Richmond Renaissance will be at the El Cerrito High School Performing Arts Theater on May 6th and May 7th. And here's Annabelle, or Nia, which I can call you either, right?
Either one.
Yeah, well, we're delighted to have you again. So, actually, you're not from North Richmond. You're from Richmond, too, right?
Yeah, I'm from Richmond, but I am not from North Richmond.
What do you want people to get from this play, especially from the role that you're performing in?
Well, to speak from Annabelle, I would like everybody...
Speak in her voice, please. Yes.
Speak in her voice.
Yes.
All right. Well, as Annabelle, I would like everybody to get light, love, and sunshine. Strength, but vulnerability. I'm trying to tap into just being in the moment, experiencing how Annabelle experiences, reacting how she would react. I'm just trying to tap in and show all the love and sunshine that I can.
Oh, you're doing great. This is what we call Stanislavski technique, you know, where you become the character, right?
Yes, yes.
Maybe a little talk about how you take over that role, how that role becomes you, or you become that role.
Well, it was funny because Dre actually wrote the role based off of my personality. But I feel like it was still some aspects of Annabelle that I haven't really tapped into as a person. So it's been kind of difficult to get that. I feel like my biggest challenge is the vulnerability, really tapping into that softness and gentleness, but having that power and strength behind it, but not getting too aggressive.
And this is because you are maybe more tough?
I am more tough,
yeah,
yes.
Okay. let me get Dr. Moore in this. Dr. Shirley Ann Wilson Moore is professor of history emerita at California State Sacramento, author of A History of Richmond. And what do we need to know about the 40s in this post-World War II era?
Well, I think we can back up a little bit, because one of the things that you should know about Richmond, that it had been a center for cultural mingling. So before the war, you had little taverns, especially in North Richmond, where you had black Americans, Italian-Americans, Portuguese, Mexican-Americans coming together. I interviewed a woman, a native of North Richmond, who said, look, one of the taverns, I think it was called Pink's Tavern there, that's where they played polka, and that's where I learned to do the polka. And so fast forward to the World War II era, and you have an influx of people from all over the country coming to Richmond because of the shipyards. You had also African-Americans who came seeking industrial work in the workplace of the shipyards. And you had women now who were freed in many respects from the cycle of domestic low-paying labor, who got work in the shipyards, but also you put their those kind of traditional feminine skills, cooking, that kind of thing, serving, and decided to make some money on those skills by opening up clubs. These clubs like Minnie Lou's Club, Savoy, Club Savoy, and many others were owned or operated by black women who, as one told me, they said it was easier, instead of doing double duty in the workplace and then at home, to just cook and make some money off that and provide the music. And these newcomers who were flocking to Richmond, many from the agrarian South, they wanted to leave Jim Crow behind, but refused to leave their traditions from home behind.
This is a part of that big migration, really.
Absolutely.
We were talking about on forum a number of times through the years. I'm just wondering, though, when we're talking about jobs at the shipyards, obviously, we're talking about jobs, Standard Oil became big and was found, certainly had a major role in the city as well, in the founding of the city. But now you're talking about a renaissance and talking about putting the rich back in Richmond. It's not just the richness of its history, but what do you like to see take place here, guided by history, of course?
Oh, I think Richmond has untapped cultural resources that I'm glad to see these young people tapping into some of that, those musical resources. Richmond was the center of blues music. Jimmy McCracklin recorded in the early 1950s, you know, the eminent blues man, blues musician, he recorded a song called Club Savoy. And, you know, some of you may have heard it, I think, in 1951. And people came from all over the Bay Area, all over the country, out to those Richmond clubs. There were the legitimate clubs, and then there were the after-hours clubs, where after everything closed down, people, you know, ran these things in their own homes. So I think Richmond has a cultural wealth, musical wealth. This is the epicenter of blues music. Unlike some of the blues clubs in Oakland, even, and that were seen to be a little more sophisticated, Richmond clubs were rough and tumble. comparatively speaking.
Why am I thinking Ma Rainey? It's that kind of world we're talking
well,
about.
Yeah, well, Ma Rainey, certainly in the 1920s and in the 1930s, but Richmond's clubs sort of were born in that transitional period from rural agrarian blues to urban blues, but it was still, it's steeped in those agrarian traditions meet the urban industrial traditions, and you're talking about people coming together for community. There were protocols, the way you acted in those clubs, the way you treated each other in those clubs, and they were breached because there were bouncers and bodyguards and people who had to keep the peace in those clubs, but there was a way of acting that bound people together.
And again, Shirley Ann Wilson Moore is the author of A History of Richmond to Place Our Deeds. The African-American community in Richmond, California goes back to 1910 and takes us up to 1963. And now let's take you up to involvement in this program. Calls, emails, you can join us by phone, of course, at our toll-free number, and we invite you to do that. We also, the number is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org. Or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. We do want you involved, and I'm also looking at the audience here. We want you involved as well. So if you have questions or comments, talking about a Richmond Renaissance here, talking about Richmond's history, bringing in so many really things that many of you are interested in and want to know more about. So if you have a question or a comment, just raise your hand and we will indeed come to you. And I'm going to go back, if I may, DeAndre, to you. Tell us a little bit more about the RISE Center, can you?
Yeah. The RISE is a youth center in Richmond, California, and it has many different programs. It has a MAC program, Media Arts and Culture. It has a Education and Justice program, and it also has a Community Health and a YJ program, which stands for Youth Justice. And it's really a after-school center for the youth to come and feel safe and be comfortable, you know, if they want to get away from home or if they don't want to just focus on school. Or if they don't want to, or if they just having a lot going on, they can just come there. We feed them. We give them a safe space to talk. We listen to them. We do a whole bunch of activities with the youth. And it's open for anybody. It's not just for Richmond, California, but it's based in Richmond, California.
And again, the Rice Center is putting on this play. Do you know, can you say something about the funding? I mean, where it comes from for the Rice Center?
It comes from different funders.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that for sure.
Well, the supervisor was talking to me a little bit about it, saying that it comes from different sources.
Yeah, yeah, it's different. And we hold different fundraisers. Our biggest one of our biggest ones, we just had one called Be a Kid. It was about a month ago on April 7th.
Naya, what do you hope the community gets out of this production that you're in as Annabelle?
I hope people... Well, I was listening to this sister talk, and I felt like I learned some new things, heard some things that I researched before, and I just feel like it's a lot of people in Richmond who don't know about Richmond. It's a lot of people who live in Richmond who are just stuck in the streets, stuck in death, stuck in, like, hopelessness. So just to see different types of things that you didn't know was about your city, just to know that the talent you do have, you can tap into that and shine, is something special. But if you never know or you never get the knowledge about it, then you always will forever be stagnant and you can't grow.
So the play has that message in it, you think? It is communicating that important message you just cited.
I feel like we have that message in every production, that you can always grow, you can always shine, no matter where you come from and no matter what your obstacles are, you can reach whatever you need to reach.
Okay, we go to our audience, and Brett has a question for us.
Thank you. Yeah. This sounds like a beautiful play, and I think you said it was going to play at the El Cerrito Community Center. And I went to El Cerrito High School. I also went to Contra Costa College, and I loved the productions they had at the musical theater here. But I'm wondering that the play, if it can actually be so popular, it can expand beyond that, if there's future plans.
Well, the play is actually at El Cerrito High School Theater. And it can expand, but we just trying to get the 1,200 seats right now before we worry about expanding. So if y'all can buy those tickets and then we do fill out those 1,200 seats, then we can do an encore, because for Tay's Harmony, we also sold out the one night that we did it, and we also did an encore. So it is possible for us to do it again, but we got to sell out the first 1,200 first.
And this gentleman over here who's waving the, I think, can give you some help as the flag came up there. DeAndre, let me go back to you. Can you tell us a little more about the plot of your play in addition to the fact that it's set in a juke joint and has all this vitality to it?
Yeah. As I said before, it follows the character of Annabelle and her staff. So on Annabelle's staff, she has the bouncer. His name is Soja. He is a World War II veteran. He is going through a lot, you know, just being a black man in America, but also the issues with being a veteran. So a black man in America who is also black. And after him, we have the character of Lucinda. She is overly sheltered, and she is a waitress in the club, but she's an aspiring singer, and she really wants to chase her dreams, but she's still trying to figure out how does she does that. And then there's the character of Mahalia, who's the star of the club, who's the singer, and she's conceited, and she has a lot going on with her character. She's trying to figure out, like, who she really is as far as, like, changing her attitude, because she really don't want to be the uppity, aggressive a-hole who she is, which is why she's at Annabelle's. You understand what I'm saying?
She's not patterned after Mahalia Jackson, is she?
Not character-wise, because I don't know Mahalia Jackson personally, but her name influenced me. You feel me, Mahalia Jackson?
I got to tell you, when you talk about these characters, you do it with an intensity that only playwrights who give birth to these characters have.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's practice. I ain't going to lie.
Let me go into the audience again. And let's. We have Domingo. Domingo, welcome. I'm sorry. Darius in the audience. Forgive me. Yeah, Darius, please.
So my first question is, as a playwright, as someone that wants to be a playwright eventually, where did you get the inspiration for this play from? Like, you can write a play. Like, what inspired you to write a play about Richmond in the 1940s when you could have written a play about Oakland or anywhere else in the Bay Area? And second of all, as a community college, what can we do to help out the Rise Center?
All right. Well, the thing that inspired me to write a play specifically about Richmond, because I believe it's one of those, you got to start with your own house. You know what I'm saying? It's like, if your house is dirty, you're not finna go clean up somebody else's first. You gotta start with your own house. So I felt like I had to touch on Richmond, because Richmond is the place that specifically made me who I am today. You feel me? And then also the people who are around me, we all from Richmond, and all of them have done many things in their life, and I have been a part of their production, and they have influenced and inspired me. My brother Tay wrote a play. My sis Naya, she wrote a play. And my other sister Jamikia wrote a play. And so I feel like it's on me now. What I'm going to do? Secondly, as far as community college helping out Rise, there's a lot you could do. First thing, you could just show up. You feel me? You can come there, you know, talk to our kids, talk to our youth, talk to the staff, hold some conversations. And if you're not able to do that, then maybe you could just email, you feel me? Maybe you can invite some of the kids to come up here and do a class. You know, it's a lot of whole other things. But first thing you need to do is, like, figure out a way to just reach out with somebody up there. And me and I work up there, so you can talk to us.
DeAndre, I should just mention there's a link on our website. So people can go to our website, kqed.org, and find out more. And let me go find out more about this era from Dr. Moore, who's here with us. Who's, again, the author of The History of Richmond, To Place Our Deeds, The African-American Community in Richmond, 1910 and 1963. This World War II, post-World War II period, really, the music put Richmond on the map, didn't it?
It did. It did. Richmond became world-known for the music. And as someone I interviewed for the book told me, you know, anyone of any stature might have to sneak out there to maintain their good names, but that's where you went if you wanted to hear good music. And all of the greats passed through these clubs. And you know, these clubs, woman-owned and/or operated, were staging grounds for a lot of political activities as well. the first the branch of the NAACP was formed during the war in 1944. It became the fastest growing on the West Coast, and the much of the business was conducted in the blues clubs. Minnie Lou's Club and other clubs provided that venue for that as well.
So, excuse me, Doug, what happened to that music?
I describe the transition. The clubs didn't appeal to a younger generation. Many, you know, if you think about the difference between blues musicians who were, their music was rural-based and transformed in the urban milieu, really, and then you compare that to what was beginning to happen in the early 1960s, late 1950s, 1960s. Think about the Motown performers that had begun to eclipse. This is eclipse that the kinds of themes and the kinds of the kind of music that had been such a bedrock.
We entered another era, really.
Yeah.
Let me go to a caller. Domingo, join us. You're on the air on Forum. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. First of all, I just want to commend the young generation that's gone forth to get on stage and put Richmond on the map and put the Bay on the map. And so that goes out to you guys, and I hope I can go and see it soon. The question goes to Dr. Moore, the historian, talking a bit more about the Bay. I'm originally from San Francisco. My family's been here since the mid-40s, basically post-World War II. And they arrived at the shores of Dogpatch here in San Francisco. So my question is more about the waterfront communities, the African American communities in particular. But if there was any kind of inter-bay or cross-bay kind of camaraderie or some sort of cultural exchange too, that obviously this was all kind of bustling and kind of thriving at the same time, I would imagine.
There, you know, this Richmond wasn't isolated from the rest of the Bay Area, and you have to understand that there were clubs, blues clubs, jazz clubs in San Francisco, Oakland, and the environs. But Richmond had the reputation of being the center for music, for the food, and those kinds of traditions from home that many of the people who would come from the South wanted and craved and sought out in Richmond. So you had people crossing the Bay all the time to come to the clubs in Richmond. And let me just add, too, that we're not just talking about African Americans. We are talking about white people would come out to Richmond. And it was a regulated process. Some of these women told me, you know, they couldn't come just anytime they wanted to, and we set the rules in a place where they were limited in power, and particularly women. They said, we can come. We'll tell you when to come out. One woman said, I told them to come around to the back. And just we wouldn't let white taxi cabs come out to drop them off at the clubs. Because they wouldn't let African Americans ride in those taxi cabs. We stipulated that. So there was an economic control that came out of the blues club experience. And
they were going to Richmond just like New York, they were going to Harlem.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I want to commend a book here by Isabel Wilkerson, which I'm sure you're familiar with, about that black migration. And bring in another caller. George is next. George, you're on the air.
Thank you much. Really enjoying the show. I'm Caucasian. I was born in Point Richmond, 1951. My father worked at the shipyards and went on to Standard Oil. I grew up playing sports, went to Richmond High School and stuff, which is pretty integrated. Does the doctor know anything about the Ku Klux Klan present in the county or that city?
I have a little section on the book about the Klan activities, and it was an established fact, especially in the 1920s, that there used to be Klan parades down McDonald Boulevard One man I interviewed, a black man, said, look, we knew who they were. My dad worked for some of them. And it was seen as one person said, it was just another organization to join. So there was, as it was all over the country, Richmond didn't stand alone in that. The Ku Klux Klan had a resurgence in the 1920s in the post-World War I period. And it had cultural significance and political clout as well. And that was true in Richmond.
And let me just say, before we end this segment, which has been certainly illuminating and fun talking with all of you and enlightening, Richmond Renaissance, Rise Up, all that and so forth. We're talking not just about drama here. We're talking about really what you want to see is a real elevation of the arts in general, aren't you?
Yeah.
So how do you get people more active? How do you get them more involved? What do you want to do to see them more involved?
Well, first off, it's like I said before, I want people to just start talking and communicating with people. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's about, getting back to the sense of community. Because during this time period, it was a sense of loving thy neighbor and knowing thy neighbor, being willing to help out thy neighbor. Because it was important for the character Annabelle to make sure that other people in the community was helping out her and she was helping out everybody else. She giving people jobs. She giving people food. She cooking for them. You ain't got no money? All right, come on in. Next time, you ain't got no money? All right, come on in. Third time, you want a job? You feel me? So it's about the idea of community and understanding who you are and ownership. And when I say ownership, I don't just mean owning property. That's important, but property come and go. It's about having the ownership of yourself as a person and knowing who you are. If you know who you are, then you have no problem with helping out your next person because you ain't looking at it as like, oh, selfishly, oh, am I going to get this back? It's like, I know who I am. And I know I can always get more material. I can always get more money because I know I'm hardworking and I'm a determined person.
And Naya, is he speaking for you here too?
I feel like, yes, certainly. But I also feel like it's just the main part I want to touch on is the knowing yourself. Because when you know yourself, then you know where you want to go.
Let me lend it there, and thank you all. Thank you, Naya. Thank you, Deandra. Thank you, Dr. Watson, Dr. Wilson Moore, excuse me. And thank you, this great audience of ours. I'd like to thank everyone at Contra Costa College. And thank you for listening. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.